Welcome to Recalculating.biz again. We have a really interesting guest today, David Bloom. He's a general manager of Sterling. He's going to tell us a little bit about the company. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, as we ask all of our guests, tell us a little bit of, first about yourself personally, then about your company, and equally important, a website that people can go to right now and look at who and what you are.
Sounds great. So my name is David Bloom. I'm the general manager of the small and mid-sized business unit at Sterling. My background is pretty diverse. I've done everything from work in nonprofits and the government. I've worked in big companies like American Express. I've worked in media at places like the New York Times and Dow Jones. And importantly, just before I came to Sterling, I ran my own small business for about 5 years. We were a technology company. So I know very well what it means to pay payroll out of your checking account late night with a laptop sitting on the couch. So hopefully I can empathize with your audience. At Sterling, we are one of the world's largest providers of employee background checks and related verification services. We were founded back in the 1970s by a guy from Long Island named Billy Greenblatt, and we're still founder-led to this day. But instead of being, Billy and a few friends working out of a storefront, we now have 4,000 employees around the world and serve tens of thousands of customers and do millions of background checks every year. So it's been an exciting journey for him, and it's exciting for all of us who are part of that journey with him.
And your website?
Our website is sterlingtalentsolutions.com. That's the homepage, and you can learn all about the services that we offer. And we have a great product just for small business. It's a real self-service tool for background checks for small and mid-sized businesses called sterlingnow.io.
We'll get back to that a little bit later. But I'm going to start by hitting you with a statistic that I just saw the other day. 73% of companies under 50 employees do not employ background screening companies, or indeed do background screening for a majority of their employees. What do you say to that?
Well, I always say that the competition we have is apathy or lack of awareness, and that but frankly, it's very understandable. When you're a small business owner, you have everything to do. Your job is 100% of your business. And it's very easy for small business owners and entrepreneurs to work in their business instead of working on their business. And especially at a time when it is so hard to hire great people, the urge to, when you find that person, to simply make the offer and get them started is really strong. And taking a few days or even just a few hours and paying an extra couple bucks to do a background screening, I get the impulse to avoid that. I can relate to that. But I think it's penny wise, pound foolish, and it's part of my mission is to help educate the audience and educate the market around why it is some of the best, $25 you can ever spend.
When you say it's $25 to do your background check for your product?
Well, our basic entry product for small business is $29.95, and we consider that to be a high-quality search that will give a quality result. And obviously, we have other offerings that go up in price from there, as well as ability to customize. But when I speak to small businesses, a lot of times they have seen on the internet what I refer to as the 99-cent pizza slice of background searches. And they think they're spending a dollar or two and getting some meaningful information, but they're really not. One of the most important criteria I tell people when they're thinking about doing a background check is make sure they're working with a credentialed, certified provider and that the search that's being run is actually delivering quality results. Instant is usually not quality. and I tell people to concentrate on quality results from a certified provider.
Well, what are some of the questions an employer should be asking someone like yourself?
Well, the first thing they should ask is whether the background screening vendor is runs compliant screens. Running a background check is a highly regulated activity, and for very good reason. People's jobs are at stake. There's a lot of personally identifiable and private information involved. So this is an area where it's great that there's regulation, and they should make sure that the provider is following those regulations. And the question to ask is whether the provider is accredited by the National Association of Professional Background Screeners, the NAPBS. Most accredited providers will have on their website the NAPBS logo, and you can often find it on the footer, the bottom of the page. The other thing they should look for when it comes to compliance is to make sure that the vendor is complying with all the requirements of the Fair Credit Reporting Act. That is the big federal regulation that governs background screening for employment purposes. Anybody who is a certified NAPBS background screener will be following the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
That's all good. But I guess what I'm really asking is, what questions should someone be looking at for in terms of the potential employee? A bankruptcy?
Oh, yes. Thank you for clarifying. So it varies by your industry, and it varies by the job, and frankly, it also varies by you as the employer's tolerance for risk, right? So the first thing that I recommend, so when I was running my own small business, it was a technology company. The searches that I wanted to have done involved a basic criminal check that covered not just the current address of the person, but every place they have lived over the last several years. So for example, if you're hiring someone right out of college, chances are they've lived in one county with their parents and one county at school. If you only look at their current county, you'll miss half the year. And where they've lived for half the year. So first, I want to do a criminal check, and I want to make sure that criminal check covers all addresses for the last 7 years. 7 years is the general federal standard. The second thing I want to do is I want to look at the Department of Justice National Sex Offender Registry. A lot of those issues will pop up on a criminal search, but not all of them, so it's important to check both services. And then lastly, I want to make sure that any source that I'm having checked is doing what we call local source validation, meaning if something pops up on the background screen in the criminal check, is the background screener taking the next step to go to the source of that information, whatever that local courthouse might be, and verifying the data? So again, it should be a Department of Justice Sex Offender Registry search. It should be a 7-year criminal history, and it should have local source verification or validation. Those are the questions that I want to have. Those are the screens or the searches that I want to have run on my own people. Going a little bit beyond that, as I said before, it really also depends on your industry and it depends on the job. So in some industries, you're going to want to check professional credential. Is someone really an electrician, for example? They say they are. Let's check. You're going to want to, if they're doing deliveries for you, you want to check their motor vehicle record. Maybe they're going to be an executive in your company, and you want to make sure that they had the job history that they claim to. So you can run verifications on driving, education, professional certifications, even their education, employment. Those are all things that you might consider checking depending on the job.
What about college credentials?
Yeah, I think it really varies, and we see a lot of differences. Most small businesses that we see are not checking education history. I think that's a mistake, but that's just the fact. And I think the reason for it is that it can often be a pretty manual process for the background screening provider to double-check that, so if that adds to the cost. But if you want to make sure that the person you're hiring has integrity and has represented themselves correctly, checking to see if their resume is accurate is critical. It's not just whether they have committed a crime that wound up in the court system. it's whether they are representing themselves with integrity and transparency to you as the boss. And that's where I think an education check or an employment history check really comes into play. You're looking into that person's integrity, not just their criminal history.
We're talking with David Bloom. He's general manager for the small business practice of Sterling Background Screening. And we're really glad to have him because I have a lot of questions about background screening because it is so critical. Let me ask you another question, Dave. What about bankruptcy? In this day and age, bankruptcy and loss of home, while common, should also be known. How do you deal with that?
Well, bankruptcy and the issues associated with someone's credit history is a very complicated part of background screening. And while I understand why it might be of interest to someone, especially if they were dealing with finances, I also caution small businesses to go to explore that carefully. For example, if you are asking for a credit report for your applicant, the law requires that the credit reporting bureaus confirm that the physical location where that report is being reviewed is secure. And that means while you wait for the background check to process, someone from TransUnion or Experian or one of those reporting agencies is going to have to go to your office and see where that report is being handled. And that, and any provider that says they can get you that information without that level of due diligence is probably not a background screening provider you want to do business with.
But can you, as a small, can if I were an employer, could I ask Sterling to get a financial background?
Yes. So we have a large number of products, and we work with both small companies and some of the world's largest companies, and we do everything from drug screening to credential check to licensing to education verification, as well as bankruptcies and all sorts of financial reviews, such as looking for liens and judgments against you. So we have a wide range of products and services in this area. In fact, one of my favorite parts of our business is a company called Bishops, which does private investigations. And you can hire them if you're making a very important hire to run a much more thorough check on the individual than even Sterling does in its main business. We also do fingerprinting verification, and we have the country's largest network of fingerprinting kiosks where you can go and have your applicants fingerprinted and checked against the FBI database. So we have an awful lot of ways for you to learn about the people you're hiring and hire with confidence.
Well, it's become critical. You may or may not know, but I sit on a medical marijuana board here in New Jersey. And what has come up in New Jersey and it's coming up across the country is people take marijuana for medicinal purposes are now running into problems. Are you familiar with that area at all? Do you want to talk about it?
Well, I am very interested in this area because it talks about the changing, the dynamic nature of what constitutes a good employee. And, you know, New Jersey has medical marijuana, New York State. A lot of states are going to both medical and even recreational. The entire West Coast, from California up to Washington, has recreational marijuana allowed. So if I'm a business, Do I want to spend money checking for marijuana use by my employees? And it's an important question to ask. What are you going to do with the information? Are you going to deny someone a job based on illegal behavior? So I recommend that people, when they do want a drug test, I think they need to go into it with their eyes open and interpret the data they get back from that drug test. With a very thoughtful personal lens. What is the right thing for my business given the state of society today? And as medical marijuana and recreational marijuana becomes more and more prevalent, I think businesses need to take a more a thoughtful, nuanced approach to it.
Oh, absolutely. But let me ask you the question. If an employer feels on personal moral grounds that he does not want to hire someone with who has a marijuana, who uses marijuana, can he or she do that?
So anytime you use the result of a background check to deny someone employment, you need to follow a regulatorily prescribed process. That is called adverse action. That is where you notify the person, the candidate, that they are being denied a job on the basis of medical marijuana, and they can dispute. And they can dispute the result, or they can dispute the decision. I am not a lawyer, so I don't want to say exactly what each state, what the laws are in each state. But another thing that your listeners should keep in mind is that when they run a background check, they should do it with a provider that supports the adverse action process in a way that is compliant with the laws and can give them specific advice about their specific case.
Well, that's why you're on this program and you're giving good advice. We're talking with David Bloom. We're talking with David Bloom. His company is Sterling. The website, David, for people?
The website is sterlingtownsolutions.com, and our small business background screening product, completely self-service, and we can get you up and running in less than 5 minutes, is at sterlingnow.io.
That's really important. And let me go into another area, which is a hot button. There is eight coaching positions open in the NFL, and they have the Rooney Rule,
mm-hmm.
which says you must interview at least one black candidate for any of these positions, which is interesting. Yesterday, I had another one person on the program that said that's actually illegal. Because if you reverse it. But the question is, do you keep statistics for your clients about the various compliance rules they have to follow in the job process?
So we do. We have a knowledge library on our website that is full of educational articles and other case studies around background screening and the relevant regulations. We also do webinars and other educational programs, and on sterlingtalentsolutions.com, your listeners can find all that information. The important thing that everyone needs to understand is that the cost of a bad hire is high. It hurts your brand, it hurts your customers, it hurts your revenue, and it means that all the money and time you spend hiring that person is wasted. So we urge people to educate themselves about what is most important to them, design a program that is both cost effective but comprehensive and will protect their brand and protect their customers and their colleagues, and then take action on it. It's one of those things that's very easy, and I can relate. I was a small business owner. It's very easy to just disregard it at the last minute when you're ready to bring that candidate on board. But for, in our case, an entry price of $29.95, that's a great way to safeguard your decision and make sure that you're hiring with confidence.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's why we invited you on the program. But let's get a little specific without naming names. Can you give a couple of instances in your experience where not hiring or not using someone like yourself has backfired?
Oh, yes. We have lots of war stories here at the office. I cannot name names, but I can tell you that we have had clients who have, for whom, a candidate has applied to multiple companies. And the company that we searched for, because of the search we ran for them, uncovered serious felonies. But when the same applicant when to apply for other companies who worked with other background screening providers, did not uncover those felonies, and it led to humongous problems, very public problems, in fact, crimes. So we've seen that. We had another client who ran a very basic background check with us, and because of the decision around how what we call thin the screen was, wound up missing some critical information around the candidate that was only uncovered when the crime was made public. And then they obviously now are expanding their background search program with us. So we've seen everything from drug dealers, sex offenders, all sorts of very public problems in the media, all uncovered by thorough background checks that were missed by either not running background checks or running a weak background check. And I'll tell you, one that was a very powerful lesson for me was an online education company that discovered one of their teachers was a registered sex offender, and they had not run a thorough search to uncover that information. Now, that the person didn't have direct access to kids or students, it was all on the web, but I can assure you that is not the position that company wanted to be in, and their background checking program is now much more rigorous than it was before.
That's really interesting to hear. But let's drill a little bit further down on that, because is it possible, I guess it is, for vital information like that to slip through the cracks or somehow be ignored?
Well, let's talk a little bit. This is actually a very interesting question about what goes into a background check and how, you know, what happens, how is the sausage made, so to speak. The information in a background check, even the most basic stuff, looking at the Department of Justice sex offender registry and county courthouse records, you're really talking about a hodgepodge of local record keeping protocols and procedures, some of which are managed by individuals working part-time in a courthouse records room. So the source information that all companies, not just us, but everybody in the industry has to work with is imperfect. Data changes. Sometimes you're dealing with people who operate with aliases, and some of those aliases are totally innocent, right? My name is David. I have records under Dave. People have maiden names, for example. So, and then how that data is gathered and organized and presented, and the regulations around how that data can be presented, all mean that we're dealing in it is an imperfect world. And I urge people to, you know, when I talk to people about background checking, I don't say that this is a perfect science and that we shouldn't pretend that it is. And there are some companies out there that would lend you to believe that they will give you all the information you need to make a perfect decision. We're not one of those companies. We are transparent, but what we do think is that while it is possible that people can slip through the cracks or the source data is imperfect, it is far better to do a search and have done your due diligence and be wrong than to pretend that everything is okay and avoid it.
Good words. We're talking with David Bloom. His company is Sterling Background. David, your website again for people?
SterlingTalentSolutions.com, and our small business website is SterlingNow.io.
Well, we just have a minute left. What would be one final thought you want to leave with our audience today?
Well, I'll leave it at this. I have been a small business owner, and I have worked in big companies on behalf of small businesses like I do now and as I did when I worked at American Express with the restaurant industry back in the day. I love this category. I love small business. It is the people who work in this go to work every day because they have a passion for their customers, a passion for what they do, and even if they're just doing it as it's, because it's the job they inherited from their family, it means something. And I am thrilled that Sterling has an opportunity to help small business owners make smarter hiring decisions that will protect their businesses, their colleagues, and their customers. And I really urge anybody who cares about the future of their own small business, please go to sterlingtalentsolutions.com and learn about background screening, or come to sterlingnow.io and buy a background screening. It's really easy, and it can save you a lot of heartache down the road.
Well, on that note, David Bloom, will tell you that a link to your website will be on recalculating.biz tonight, where you can hear this and every other past and future program, and you can tell us guests you'd like to hear. David Bloom, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for having me.
That was really good, David. David, thank you.
Awesome.
It was terrific.
Oh, I'm glad. Thanks, Don. This was great. I appreciate the good questions, and I really appreciate that you did some homework before the interview. That made it much easier for me.
Well, we try to make it a good program, but it's the guests that make the program. The less I talk, the better off it is.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad to have done it. If there's any follow-up or anything I can do, or you get any feedback from the audience you think would be helpful, or please let us know. And I look forward to hearing when it airs and to being a fan.
Okay. And it'll be up probably next Friday. But if you go to recalculating.biz, you can hear a copy of it probably next week.
Sounds terrific. I will keep an eye on it. Thanks again, Don. Have a great day.
You too, and Happy New Year.
And you. Bye-bye now.
There you are, Marissa. Hello. Somebody's on from... unmuted you. Somebody just called in. Hello there. Hello there. Somebody just called in. Hello.
Yep. Hold on one second. Let's try this.
All right. How's that?
Very good.
Can you hear me?
Can you talk a little closer to the... Can you talk a little bit closer to the mic?
Absolutely. How's that?
That's fine. How are you, Marissa?
Oh, I'm very well. How are you? And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Are you ready?
I'm always ready.
I like that. Okay. I'm going to ask you first a little bit about your background, a little bit about your company, and then a website, and we'll go from there. How's that? Okay?
That sounds like a plan to me.
Okay. Remember to stay as close as you can to the mic.
Okay.
But anyway, other than that, we're ready to go. 5 seconds for the engineer.
You got it.
I'm Don Mazzella. The program is recalculating.biz. We have a really special guest today, Marissa Costonis. Wait a second. I should have asked you, Marissa. How do you pronounce your last name?
You did it perfectly. It's Costonis.
Costonis. Okay. Let me start over. This is Don Mazzella. The program is recalculating.biz. And the guest today is Marissa Costonis. She's an exciting guest, and I look forward to asking her the following questions. Marissa, a little bit about your personal background, your company, and your website.
Absolutely. Well, Don, thank you so much for having me. I just want to thank you for allowing me to tell my story and a little bit about my company. I have a company called Change Bites, and I'm actually a health coach. People wonder, what does that mean? But if I give you a brief explanation, it'll make a lot of sense. My background
But before you do, Marissa, we want to know your background.
Absolutely. My background is actually in corporate change management consulting. I worked in a variety of Fortune 100 companies all over the world, helping organizations through real transformational strategic initiatives. And my job was to help the employees through the change and guide the leadership through the change so that the benefits could be realized. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. But after well over 10 years of working with Accenture doing that, I decided to follow my passion a little bit in health and wellness. And while you might think the two have nothing to do with each other, they ended up intersecting really quite nicely. I found that my approach to helping others change their eating habits and their health was very similar to helping an organization through a major change. And so I decided to, instead of focusing on the what to eat, my focus in my company, Change Bites, is to really come up with a methodology, if you will, for how to change, because it's not really, we all pretty much know what kinds of foods we need to eat, but nobody has really looked at a comprehensive approach for how to change. And so I found that using a business mindset to do that ended up to be a really effective approach. I ended up using it on myself, and now I use it with my clients. And then I put it into a new book that just came out called Change Bites.
Okay, that's a start. And your website?
My website is www.changebites.com. And I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Marissa, this is radio. Spell out your website.
Absolutely. It's www.change, change, bites, bites.com.
Okay, we now have a framework, but now when you say it's a total change, what do you mean by all of that?
So let me back up a little bit and tell you what happened to me is I thought I was always pretty healthy. I looked great on the outside. And I had a bunch of health problems that started to add up. Some sinus issues, digestion, some joint pain, things that I sort of brushed aside. And then one day I realized that I was having some symptoms that looked like multiple sclerosis. I was having some tingling and numbing. And I ended up, it took me years to find out what was wrong. And I sat in a doctor's office and he finally had an answer, but it wasn't the answer I was hoping for. He said, you need to change your diet 100%. You need to give up gluten, dairy, processed foods, sugar, grains. I thought to myself, are you kidding? I was just paralyzed. And I left the office in tears. I thought I would be excited to have some answers for my condition. And what I ended up was just paralyzed with fear about how do I go about changing my diet and improving my health. So I went back to my business methodology around change. And your question is kind of what's the big picture? I wondered if I could use the same process for change that I used with business and apply it to health. And let me give you an example of that. You know, businesses often, they need to start with understanding the vision and create a strategic plan for what the change is all about. And I found that I needed to do that with myself. Why did I need to get healthy? What did that look like? You know, we all talk about getting healthy, especially in January, this time of year. Everybody says, I want to get healthy. But what does that really mean? And the same way that we define that for businesses, I found that I needed to do it and my clients need to do it to define their vision of what perfect health is. What does it feel like? What are your pains gone? Do you sleep well? What other conditions are you trying to heal? It's not just about being healthy. What that means for me is totally different from what it means to you and to everyone else. So this strategic visioning process and planning process used so often in business ended up being a really great place to start in terms of the process of changing how I ate and changing my health.
Keep going. Okay.
Okay, so you that, like that.
Well, on this program, the less I talk, the better the program.
All right. Well, the other thing that we found that I found through the process is that, you know, we all have a variety of different changes we want to make at some point in our life. Maybe we want to eat a little bit differently. We want to add some more greens into our diet, or we want to eat a little less junk, or maybe some people now really want to eat more plant-based. Other people want to eat a keto diet or a paleo diet. There certainly is no shortage of diets or health changes or food changes that people want to make. But what I found, Don, is that the desire to change alone is just not enough. We can't decide that on come Monday, I'm never going to eat another cookie. I'm not going to eat any sugar. I'm never going to eat any junk. I'm going to eat perfect, whatever perfect means. So the desire to change our diet alone, it just isn't enough. Look at a company. Two companies might be in the middle of a merger, and they might sign the deal on Friday. Well, on Monday, they're not automatically two combined companies. They need to really think about how they're going to approach this merger. Let's use this as an example. Well, starting a food and a health change is no different. You have to look at the process that you use. So let's say I want to eat a more plant-based diet. I want to shift to that. Well, what's the process that I use to cook? Do I have enough of the right ingredients in the house? Instead of eating meat, now do I have other ingredients like beans and legumes and nuts and seeds and perhaps some tofu? So what's the process I use for food shopping? Do I have food delivered? How do I simplify that? What about skills? In a business, we look at the skills of the employees. Well, do I have the skills to start cooking according to my new food plan? If I want to eat more paleo or keto, do I know how to cook like that? So maybe I need to do some research. Maybe I should take an online cooking class. You know, the skills are to cook are just as important as a business looks at the skills they need to make a business change. So what's your vision? Do you have the right skills? And then I think the other key piece here is people want to make big changes right away. And while big changes are great, they may give you some short-term benefit, what we find in business and in health is that a quick hit, a couple of quick things you can do right away closer to your vision and really helps to create sustainable changes over time. You know, if I immediately on day one had to give up all those foods without planning, without training myself, without shopping differently, without cooking differently, it would be really difficult to sustain. And that's why 90% of business initiatives are a reasonable success, and yet 95% of diets fail. Businesses often implement a methodology that incorporates a lot of different pieces to it to make it a success. So another example in business that plays really well into food and health change is communication. So what kind of support and communication do you have with the people around you? You know, I have a lot of clients in my health coaching practice that have food sensitivities and some of them severe allergies like celiac. They can't have a morsel of gluten. Years ago, the issue there was, what foods have gluten, what foods don't? And that's what health coaches tended to focus on and nutritionists. But today, you can learn that on the internet. What food has gluten, what food doesn't? The tricky part is the communication and the partnering with your friends and your family to help you in this. So, for example, over the holidays, if you look on, there's a lot of discussion boards where people can seek support with other people throughout the country and the world that have celiac. This connection is proved so important to people trying to make a change. It helps keep them accountable. It gives them that amount of support. So the real issues aren't about, does this cookie have gluten or not? The real issue is, I went to a family party. and there was nothing I could eat. My mom didn't realize how to cook. My friends didn't realize how to cook. So that connection, that each person needs to talk with their family, talk with their friends, help them understand what they can do to help you as a person that has some sort of dietary restriction through it. So communication is critical.
We're talking with Marissa Gastonis. She's got a wonderful new book. Marissa, the title again and the website?
Absolutely. It's Change Bites, 5 Change Management Strategies to Transform Your Health. And it's on Amazon. It was a #1 bestseller. And my website is www.changebites.com.
Well, Marissa, I had to, it's interesting. As you were talking, I was thinking, I have type 2 diabetes, and I have over the years talked to various places about the changes I made. The two that I started with was no sugar in my coffee and switching from regular soda to diet soda, two of the most difficult things I had to do in my life.
Yep.
Other things I've done. And I realize I've changed over the years, but it's taken almost 20 years to really get to that point. Is that what you're in effect saying? You have to do things carefully, and you have to have a plan, an overall plan?
That is exactly right. So you had your overall plan. You knew you needed to change perhaps a lot of things, but you decided to start with those two things that were going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. And that's a way that I call winning quick. So what small things can you do that you won't just do for a week or two, but that really you're going to make these changes over time and that they're going to last? So it's funny, when my clients look back, and perhaps when you look back, maybe you can't even imagine how much soda you drank or how much sugar you might have had if you look at all the cups of coffee or all the cans of soda, right, when you add it up. Were you surprised when you looked back at that?
My wife reminds me, which is, by the way, the other critical. Yes, it's the other critical element when you talk about communication and having a support network. But, yes, she reminded me that I used to put 2 or 3 teaspoons in my coffee of sugar. And now I don't. I take it black. I take it with milk. But it is difficult to change. I've lost 28 pounds to get there.
Congratulations.
So,
that's amazing.
It's amazing, but it's only because my wife is there, and I always add the other element to it. You must walk at least a mile a day, which I think you agree is the other, and I'm going to ask you the question. That's, to me, the other component in any diet change is exercise. And how do you deal with that?
So I'm glad you asked that, because one of the things I find and one of the things that I wrote about was looking to change your exercise in a positive way, but also there are some people that have been doing the same exercise and it might not be right for them anymore. And they need to change it as well. So giving ourselves a bit of a break. And let me give you an example of that. I have clients who have been running 5 to 10 miles several times a week, and that worked for them. And some people say, well, starting Monday, I've never ran, but I'm going to start running 5 miles on Monday. And the thing is perhaps their joints start to hurt, their hips hurt, they're exhausted at night, their feet have problems, and while 5 miles might be great for one person, it's not great for everybody. So I think what you gave a great example of is what works for you. You know, what's something that's manageable? within your day and within your life and within your body's realm of what feels good, right? Exercise, you shouldn't finish exercise and feel terrible. You know, you shouldn't be ready for a nap an hour later and then you can't function the rest of the day. So for everybody, just as each of our diets are very different, our exercise routines need to be very different. And that's what I work with my clients around, is to say, not what do you think you should be doing, but what feels right to your body and challenges it enough, but yet still is kind to your body. Because it's no use if you decided to start jogging tomorrow and you caused a bunch of problems to your bones and your joints. I don't think that's really worth it in the end. So I think that's my biggest message, is to really ask people, no matter where they are in their exercise routine, is it working for them? Do they need to ease up? And then how? And if not, if they aren't exercising, what small things can they do to incrementally work up to a bit of exercise where they're moving their body, they're getting some good fresh air, and they're getting their heart pumping without causing any other damage. So there's a fine line, and everyone's unique in what they need.
Well, I'm going to tell you that there was an old trio group called the Limelighters, and during their show, they had one song, and they began it by saying, "You can have clean mind, clean body, take your choice." And I've always tried to live by that. But I'm going to switch gears for a minute, and because we have a lot of people on the program who are coaches, et cetera, and we've heard from a lot of our audience. Where do you get your guests, your clients from? As a coach, it's a kind of an individual process. But where do you get your guests, and how do you multiply yourself so that you're able to really make a good living, being what you are, a guru?
That's a great question, and I'm actually going to back up in order to answer it. I think, you know, there are so many health coaches. This field is growing exponentially. There are many different programs. I went to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. There are many other programs, but it's definitely a growing field. And one of the biggest suggestions I would say to any health coach or anyone interested in health and wellness is to really find their niche. There are so many different ways that you can go with a health coaching training and background. And what I would say is for each person to really think about what is in their past experience, either from a business perspective and in past career or personally, what health challenges have they faced individually that could help them develop a niche for their health coaching practice? So for me, you know, when I left corporate consulting, I thought that was the end of a career for me. And I was taking a completely different, going in a completely different direction. But what I found is that there were so many synergies between corporate consulting and health coaching. And it was just a matter of me going back and looking at where were the synergies and how could I use my past experience to help me with my current career in health coaching. Couple that with my own personal health challenge that I faced, and that was a huge component to how I shaped my practice. So, you know, my issues around digestion and sinus and joint and mostly this my nervous system and my immune system, I had issues with all of those. And the way that I used food as medicine, as they say, the process that I used, and then again, using a methodology that was business focused, I used all of that and compiled it to develop a very specific niche. So my niche is really around how to change. So my first suggestion is develop a niche, really think about the type of clients that you want. You know, when I vet my clients, I really am looking for clients that I don't care what
diet they want to try or how they want to eat, if they're vegan or if they're meat eaters or, you know, what style of eating they want to continue to go towards. My thing I vet people is, are you ready to change? So, and that goes back to kind of my background is I want to help people around how to change. I also consult clients not to really look solely at the weight as a reason to change. The weight is often a byproduct. The real reason people want to change is not losing the weight, but what does losing the weight allow you to do? So what pain does it get rid of? Does it allow you to sleep better? Does it allow you to take a nice long walk with your spouse? Does it allow you to play sports with your kids? Does it allow you to, you know, go to the beach or take a hike? There are so many things that you can do with better health. So I also, when I vet clients, look at it's not just weight per se, and are they interested in making a long-lasting change, not a quick fix? So the reason I'm going through this is because as I think about what I bring that's different and develop a niche, then vetting clients to make sure that they are aligned with your vision for your practice and what you're really good at, then you go out to target clients that meet that. And I think my biggest suggestion, Don, is that you never know where you're going to find clients. And I think sometimes one of the biggest ways I find clients is when I go out to help someone else. So, for example, I might want to meet up with a local gym to see if I could do a book signing, or I might want to meet up with a local functional medicine practice to say, hey, I'd like to do a speech or a talk about the change process. When I put myself out there, just make the call, and I look to sort of help their clients, I inevitably get clients in return. And sometimes just reaching out to other health coaches that call me, they'll say, you know, can I talk to you? I'm launching my business. And I say, sure. Well, what happens? They know somebody that happens to be in an area, a business that I'm trying to get into. And while I'm helping them, I walk out of the meeting with three new contacts of people that I didn't even expect. So I think that in terms of just being open, putting yourself out there, coming up with a plan of what does my customer look like? What do my clients look like? What do they want to achieve? How can I help them? And getting out there, talking to people, trying to help other people, connecting with businesses you think might be able to help you, and doing some pro bono work as well is a great way to get in. And then I think once you begin to develop that practice, then you think about, all right, your next question, Don, was how do you make it bigger? So the next question is, how do you take your process? Like in my case, I had a very specific methodology that I used with clients all the time. So then I said, well, let me take this to be a group session. So I would do a group workshop where people could play off of each other and use the process. And then I said, you know what? I need to write a book and package this process so that everybody can use it. And it ended up being great because I would tell a client to read the book before we met, and then we would just be able to make so much progress from there. So I think it's about, I guess I used my go slow to go fast, that small bites approach to launching my business. Sort of start small, a couple of clients in line with my vision, grow it from there, really expand using your network, and you would be surprised. Your network doesn't have to just be your business network. It can be anything. I was getting my hair cut one time, and I had a big article due on the food trends for 2019. And I happened to be talking to the woman washing my hair, and the girl next to me said, oh, have you tried this new food? It's a vegan egg. I said, no. And it ended up being the launching pad for a whole piece of the article that I wrote, just starting this conversation. So, you know, certainly explore your network in business and in your community, but just keep your ears open as well. And then think about how to grow it bigger with group sessions. And then now I'm going out to different companies and I'm saying, how can I help you to help your employees decrease their medical costs through this program? So kind of start small, keep your eyes open and keep growing from there.
Well, we're talking with Marissa Marissa Costonis. She's got a wonderful new book. Marissa, title and how people can get it.
Absolutely. It's the title of the book is called Change Bites: 5 Change Management Strategies to Transform Your Health. You can get it on Amazon.com. And for more information, you can go to my website at www.changebites.com.
A link to that website will be on recalculating.biz tonight, where you can hear this and every other past and future program. And you can tell us guests you'd like to hear from. Marissa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been illuminating.
Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Marissa, I don't think I got your book. Any chance you could send it to me? And I have
Absolutely.
A question for you. And I also have a question for you. Have you thought of doing a podcast?
That's sort of next on my to-do list for 2000. You're like on the same. You're in my brain.
Where are you located?
I am outside of Philadelphia.
Hmm. Well, when you decide to do the podcast, call me because we have a company, and what I'd like you to think about is. I am putting together a group of commentators to one each show recurring each month. We just got the president of AT&T North America to become a commentator. I think you might make a great commentator. You do 2.5 minutes pre-recorded if you're interested.
I think that sounds great. I'm up for anything.
Well, you have an interesting combination. If you're interested, let me put the list together. And if you're interested, I'll send you an invitation with the background. If you're interested, you record 2 of them at a time, at a mutually convenient time. 2.5 minutes, and we put a commercial against it.
I think it sounds great. I'm in. Yeah, that sounds great. I don't want to forget. Can you give me your address to send the book?
I just sent you an email. And you see the bottom is my address, my PO address. Your book sounds fascinating, as do you.
You know what? I love what I do, and I love my clients, and I love helping people because I think that it's too often that we see these before and after pictures of people, and look how easy in 20 days, and nobody really, it's not easy, you know, and I'm here to say that it is hard, you know, and that's okay, but if you have follow a process, just like a business, if you follow a methodical process, you can make long-lasting changes that really work. And so, obviously, it's very rewarding.
I think so, and I think you have we will call your segment "Change Bites," and you'll just do it put at the end of the program, once a month.
Great, I love it. Now,
okay.
Do you have my correct? I want to just make sure you have my right email address. It's marissa@changebites.com.
Hold on a second, because I just sent you because you were late, and I just sent you a note. Hold on.
Because I did not get an email.
Oh, wait a second. It didn't go. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Marissa had changed by. Now, hold on. Make sure I sent this to you. Hold on.
It's Marissa at Change Bytes with a T at the
right.
end. I mean,
right.
with an S at the end. Sorry.
Yes. You'll see. I'm just sending it to you right now. It's
okay.
I put it on top of your one you sent me. Joelle.
Oh, good.
Joelle was the one who did it. She does a good job, by the way.
Yes.
Isn't that the one?
Yep, I just got it.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it.
And
you got
and
it.
Joelle is your yeah, Joelle from
she
Smith.
Is my, exactly, it is. She I just actually wrapped up my PR campaign with her. I was with her all through the fall. To coincide with my book launch. So in January, I will be on my own for PR. So, but she was great, and I really enjoy it. Smith Publishing was great. So
yes. Could I ask how much you paid for that program?
I'm trying to think how much I paid on a monthly basis. I want to say it was, maybe between, maybe like $3,000?
A month?
A month?
Or total?
Something like
okay.
that. No.
Did you feel
I
it was worth it?
I can find out.
No.
I think that for me, I knew I was launching a book. I knew I was one of the few people that wanted to get this book to business people and to the health community. And I think that she got me into both of those types of publications, which was really important for me. So I was published in Forbes, HR.com, Benefits Pro, CFO.com. So a lot of business publications, but then also a lot of health and wellness publications. So for me in launching the book, trying to get those dual there's dual markets, if you will. I was just published in glutenfree.com, glutenfreeliving.com, which has a huge audience. So I think for me, it was definitely worth it. And I think I learned a lot, and I did it for a couple months. And I think I started in October. And so a short period of time and I maximized the heck out of it. Then I think it's worth it.
Okay. It's good to know. They're one of my better sources of guests. I'm just curious. I've never asked them how much they charge.
I think it depends per person, and what kind of – I don't know how difficult I was or, I certainly wasn't one of their bigger clients.
Well, it got you here. That's all that counts for me.
Right. I'm so glad that you reached out. I really do appreciate it. I'm very grateful. So thank you for allowing me to be on your show. And please let me know when it'll show up, and I'll be sure to publish
By Monday, I will send you the outline of what it's like, what I want you to do, and I'll also send you a sample from one of the other. I hope to have one finished by Monday. If I do, I'll send it so you can hear what's going on. Okay?
Okay, well, I have listened to your other programs. So, yeah, they're great. I enjoyed them.
Okay. Thank you, and have a great day, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the future about that other opportunity. So thanks for thinking of me.
It's
going to
happen within the next 2 weeks, so don't worry about it.
Perfect. I'm in.
Okay.
All right, have a great weekend. Bye-bye.